If you believe what they tell us, you'd believe in ages and stages. And as you enter the golden years, your life is all but over. In this new podcast, we aim to dispel the fusty myths and apparent prerequisites of old age. You can hear the inverted commas. We set out to prove that age is not just a number, but more importantly, a state of mind. We walk you gently through the joy and despair of coming to terms with the golden years while upgrading ourselves to what we like to call the platinum years. With a host of guests from all walks of life, we discuss their philosophy on aging well. We aim to bring you a manifesto for living a longer, healthier, happier life, and what reaching old age signifies to each of our guests. One thing is for sure. There's never been a better time to embrace old age. We have the time, experience, knowledge, infinite wisdom, well, we hope you do, and more importantly, the cash, or so the millennials will have us believe, to live life to the fullest. So say no to age discrimination, and yes to a long and happy life. Hello, everyone. Let me introduce you to my guest, Lynn Ruth Miller. Lynn Ruth, at 87, is considered the oldest female stand-up comedian on both sides of the Atlantic. She's won many awards and accolades. She only started doing this at 71 after a career as a writer, tutor, and newspaper columnist. She was intending to write about comedy, went to a stand-up course for research, and fell in love with performing. She's self-mocking and wickedly funny. She is truly a Renaissance woman who wears many hats. At 67, she published her first book, Starving Hearts, an autobiographical novel. She's followed it with a series of other books and articles. Sprinkling humour with a touch of nostalgia, her works focus on many of the topics she also discusses on stage. She's a speaker who has inspired many others with eating disorders, as she once had, and helped them believe they can help themselves, just as she did. And she paints as well. Lynn Ruth really shows everyone that there's no such thing as being too old to try something new. Hello, Lynn Ruth, and thanks very much for agreeing to talk on this podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Nigel. Hello.
Hello. Now, the first question I ask everybody is, what does too young to stay in, too old to go out mean to you?
Nothing.
Really?
Nothing.
So much for that question.
I find that objectionable and patronizing. One of the tubes has a thing about granny flying over the moon or something that I find very patronizing. I had a friend whose name was Wanda, who was about 6 feet tall and loved to wear very short skirts where I think the very edges of her knickers would show. And the man that she was living with, who was 10 years younger than she, said to her, "That's not seemly for you to dress that way." And she said, "I've got beautiful legs, and I'm going to show them off." And I thought, and she was in her 70s at the time. And what I thought was, well, the legs aren't that beautiful, but that was me. I think it's what you want to do inside. And I also think it's terribly important that you don't compare what you do. For example, we sing, I tell jokes, I dance, which is a travesty. Don't compare it to what someone else does or think, well, if I were younger, I would be better at this. You are what you are at the time you are doing it. And the charm is that. When I did my birthday, I just had the birthday, and the Telegraph reviewer was totally amazed and thought it was funny that I wore pink leggings, but they matched my outfit. It never occurred to me that this was inappropriate for my age. And I go out at all hours, and I am not afraid, because there is an old saying, worry never solved anything. If you sit and you say, what if, you'll never do a thing.
What made you fall in love with performing when you decided to start?
Well, I think probably I'm a latent exhibitionist to begin with. It was to be serious, I have lived alone, except for dogs and cats, since I was 25. And that means no one in the house. I have not had roommates. I have not had partners. And so my interchange with others was very controlled. I interviewed people for my TV programs. I interviewed people for the magazines and newspapers I wrote for. But I didn't have a lot of social back and forth, mainly because my friends tend to be younger than I, so I'm not on a confidential basis with them. So I would meet somebody for lunch maybe once a week. Then when I got up on the stage, I was suddenly talking to people.
Yeah.
Because when you're alone, you have a tendency to talk, but you're talking to yourself. I'm talking to people, and they were responding. And this is what was so astounding to me. They were responding. And I go back to when I was much younger, and my father, they always said I was a big talker, which you can see now. I mean, you ask me a question, I go off for an hour and a half. But my father always said it was like letting Lynn Ruth out of a box when she would, because I would talk and talk and talk. And it's because I don't do it all day. When you're with people all day, it is not so much of a thrill to be communicating with people. But for me, it was a sometime thing. And then all of a sudden to get up on stage and not just communicate, but get the approval, get the laughter, get the applause. It was intoxicating.
So I was going to ask you, what is your attitude to your audience? But I think you've just answered that.
I love my audience. My audience are the friends and the partners and the lovers I never had.
What would you say is the basis of your comedy?
The basis of my comedy is anger. I am
really?
All comedians, no matter what they say, it's anger. I was just talking to a group of comedians from Kuala Lumpur, and we were saying, yeah, it's anger. What we think that something that is going on in the world or to us is unfair, wrong, not logical, we make fun of it. I make fun of the senior condition because it isn't true and because we're not all like that. One of the interesting things that people don't realize is I was reading, I wish I could remember the man's name because he's a marvelous writer, but he's also a doctor. And he said, when I examine seven-year-olds, the results, the blood pressure, the weight, everything, is very similar, one child to the other. But when I examine adults, people over 70, not just adults, each one is diametrically different. So that the stereotype, the very fact that there's a stereotype is an insult, because each of us we're unique, each of us. And that's so I make fun. I mean, one of the wonderful jokes that another comedian says, and I love, his name is Jeff Applebaum. He said, I did a dinner show at a senior home. It started at 4 p.m. It's a dinner show. And people laugh because older people have a tendency to eat very early and then go to bed. And one of the comedians that often hosts me, his name is David Lewis, he will often, while I'm sitting in the audience, he will say, wake up, Lynn Ruth, in the middle of nowhere. And and I'm not sleeping, of course, but it's a funny stereotype. My comedy attacks those stereotypes. I mean, that's the thing. What is the one I do where I say, if a man my age comes on to me, I look at him and I say, is he worth a hip? Do I want to change his diaper? Well, the truth is, I don't do that. I look at him and I say, can he see me?
Yeah.
Can he hear me? And can he drive? Those are the three criteria for me. But we are all different and we age differently. And that is important also, because my audience says, I'm going to be just like my gran. No, you're not. You're not. You're going to be just like you. You're going to age differently. You're going to think differently. You're going to dress differently. We are the composite of what we've lived. And you are not the composite of what your grandma did. You are the composite of you. I think we forget that.
What keeps you wanting to write and perform?
Well, first of all, I'm an achiever. And I have not made the big time. I mean, some people think, well, everybody knows her. But I have not made the big time. I'm not the headliner at the comedy store. I'm not the headliner anywhere in the big clubs. I am in the small clubs, but I'm not. And I'm an achiever. I believe I'm funny enough. I believe I'm funnier. And I have not achieved it. So that's one thing that keeps me wanting. But the other thing is, this feeds me. This feeds me in ways I cannot explain unless you become an old lady who's lived alone since she was 25.
Well, that isn't probably going to happen to me.
I don't think that is going to happen to you, Nigel. And I can't say that I'm sorry it won't. Because when you're an old lady, things sag. Now, I'm sure they sag for men too, but not as many of them.
What's occupying your mind at the moment, and how's that reflected in your
What's
comedy?
What's occupying my mind now is the pandemic, as it is with everyone. I have very strong, non-scientifically based beliefs, and I believe that the harm that the government is doing with the lockdowns is not... I do not believe they're saving enough lives to pay for the lives they're destroying. I see people who are impoverished, and I see something else that is, to me, terrifying. I see many, many millions of people turning to the government for support. And I am a huge believer in self-reliance. Ralph Waldo Emerson writes about self-reliance. I believe we need to take care of ourselves because that gives us power and it gives us the impetus to do more. But what they're saying is, well, we can't earn any money. The government has to pay for us. The government is not your mother, but it is during this pandemic. The other thing that I feel is that the cost, I feel that everybody, and it could be just me because I've lived alone, that everybody is wary of the other. A stranger, a new person. That's why this woke business is so outrageous and so prevalent. We don't know. We're afraid of another person's opinion, another person's reaction. This pandemic has made us afraid that if we get anywhere near a person, it's going to kill us. And I believe the most beautiful thing in our lives is our connection with others. I had the most wonderful thing happen to me about 2 hours ago. I have a very good friend who's a photographer, whose name is Gus, and he was feeling depressed. So he called me to cheer up. That is the most beautiful gift I can think of. If we didn't have the pandemic, I would have gotten in an Uber and gone over there to cheer him up and visit and get drunk. But we do. And I believe that Sweden just had the right idea, which was allowing their populace to make up their own mind about how they were going to cope. I think that gives you a sense of power and a sense of responsibility. I believe this government and most of the governments in the world do that. And I have another friend who said to me, the reason they're imposing all these limits is to make us feel they're doing something about the virus. The only thing that's going to help this virus is the testing to isolate people that have it and the vaccine that we don't have. Sitting there behind a mask, breathing your own bad breath and your saliva is going to do a thing. Mm-hmm. Unless you're in the same room with someone for an hour, and then whether that person has it and you're in the room with them, you're going to get it one way or the other. And that's the other thing. Are the people who are serving us, who are taking care of us, who are cleaning up after us, they are the ones that are in unbelievable risk. And I believe that measures should be taken to protect them. I believe in all those measures for them. But for those of us that are just walking around, the idea that if we have the seventh person in the room, we're going to get the virus is absolutely ridiculous. The idea that we're going to get it if we don't get out of any place by 10. And I don't know whether you've seen the London streets at 10:01, but it's terrifying. It's more crowded than the tube used to be. Does not make sense. And when you have a government that doesn't make sense, you begin to not trust it. And I think that is a terrible loss.
Not everybody is really able to look after themselves. I mean, I get what you're saying. One can be over-reliant. But I mean, if you're a family, you've got children to feed and so on, and you
That's
both
right.
can't work.
And my friend Mark was saying, I love my kids, but they're driving us crazy. But it isn't just that. The children are not learning to socialize. Mm. Children need to socialize with people that have no power over them. Can you understand what I'm trying to say? They go
yes.
to school, and those other children don't have any power over them, and they can socialize. The teacher has power over them. The parents have power over them. They need to learn how to be people when someone isn't telling them what to do. They're not having that now.
Talking about the pandemic, how has that affected you as a performer?
Oh, it destroyed me. I was going to go to Dublin the next week, I think March 21st. And then I was going to go to Amsterdam and then Berlin and then Amsterdam again and then Ghent and then Helsinki. I had some large gigs in London. I was going to do something for the Humanist Choir, which I was thrilled about. I was going to go to Melbourne. I was going to go to Saigon for my birthday. That's this month. I was going to go to Manila and Singapore at the same time.
Huge effect.
Pardon? But the
huge effect on
it's bigger than if this had happened to a 35-year-old, because this was when I was 86. By the time the world gets itself back together, I will be 89. That's pretty old to do a world tour. Don't think I won't do it.
Well, wasn't George Burns still performing at 99?
Yes,
did he make 100? I can't remember.
That makes me feel much better. And you know what George Burns said? Let me see if I can say it. What George Burns said, he said, sex at 99 is like dropping a clothesline in a moving bottle. I think that was it. Or a clothesline, yeah. It's a clothesline trying to get a clothesline in a bottle. That's what it was. Anyway,
right.
I wouldn't know because I'm not 99.
Well, we'll talk about it in 12 years' time then.
Thank God.
So you're an American and working in the United Kingdom. How is that? How easy is that for you to do? Do you need a visa?
And that has been extremely difficult for me. And the reason it is difficult is because, A, the UK doesn't like to let people in. Because they like their citizens to get the jobs. I agree with them. And B, there is an industry that has sprung up for those of us from Australia, from Canada, from South Africa, anywhere not Brexit. And now, after Brexit goes through in Europe, where people do extortionate fees to sponsor. You need a sponsor. Now, I have no problem with that. But they do extortionate fees. I found out that I was paying, what was I paying? It was something like £189, £188. And the cost to the promoter that was sponsoring me was £21. But some of the other people that are doing this as a business will charge you £300 and £400 for 3 months. All right? You have for 3 months. I have been fairly fortunate in finding comparatively honest sponsors. But now the problem is that I have a 3 month visa and I must leave the country November 26th and come back. I am not sure I'm going to be able to do that. What I usually do is I go to France and come right back.
You may not be able to do that.
I may have to quarantine when I come back, and I'm happy to do that. But because I do have gigs. I have gigs on either Zoom or actual gigs. We are doing comedy. Not much, but we are doing comedy. It is happening. So that's what the pandemic has done. It has changed my comedy. If I do comedy online, I don't have the validation of the laugh. And many comedians have said it's not as much fun. For me, because I'm a writer, it's a different kind of fun. But I enjoy doing Zoom shows, but they're not like my stand-up. And when I do my stand-up, when I go back to it, I have a little trouble transitioning because I've been doing the Zoom comedy, which are longer stories with funny lines in them. Whereas when I do comedy, I'm more like Joan Rivers. Not as good, but more like Joan Rivers. I do set a punch, set a punch, set a punch. That's my formula.
I've just seen one of your online shows, and I enjoyed it very much. It is more chatty. It's chatty, telling stories and songs. So that is different.
Yes, very different. And there was some comedy in there, I hope you noted.
I did. Yes.
But not that much. You had stories and you had songs, and I'm working, because we're all new at this, the words to my songs are a lot more important than my singing. And the way I've got it set up now, the music is so loud that you very often miss the words. And the words are the most important thing, because my words are my comedy. And I'm hoping to deal with that. But all of us are learning. All of us are. And this is a new profession. The stand-up comedy on Zoom and online is not stand-up comedy in a club. And stand-up comedy on television is not stand-up comedy in a club. And the stand-up comedy I do is in a club. It's with a live audience. It isn't very woke. I think, very funny. But it is, you can't say the things I say on television, because they will offend someone. And I don't believe comedy is offensive. I believe anything that's funny is legitimate. And of course, because my comedy is about what I'm angry about, I'm going to touch on things that could be offensive, because I pick on stereotypes that I don't believe are real.
I mentioned at the beginning that you also paint. I think you paint every day, don't you?
Yes, I do.
What do you paint?
I believe that everybody needs a nonverbal outlet. If it's music, if it's art, if it's sports, a nonverbal expression. I used to knit. I would knit and knit and knit. And I used to go to Edinburgh and I used to buy all this wonderful wool. And of course, now nobody uses wool. They all use polyester. But anyway, I did. I believe you need it. I believe we are too. Words are one step away from feelings. When you paint, you're right with your feelings. And you're right there. when you do sports, you're concentrating on the game, not on what someone's thinking of you, not on an abstract. Words are abstracts. And I think also that people have different mentalities, and many people are just not that verbal. Words don't satisfy them. Words certainly satisfy me, because I write books, I write stories. I mean, I look for any excuse to write something. I love it. Words help me. Words are words feed me. But many people, they do not.
And it's quite interesting what you say about painting. I used to paint. I haven't painted for ages.
Oh, but I think you should.
When I'm writing, I can always get up and leave it, although it may be going on in my head. I used to find with painting, I just couldn't leave it. I could just be there going on hour after hour when I really wanted to go and do something else.
Don't you realize what that did for you? That healed you.
Well, it did when it went right. When I learned not to get too angry when things went wrong, actually, and I simplified my technique. But yes, it did.
I very often paint out things I've painted. I very often will sit and struggle with something and struggle and struggle and struggle. And then I'll leave it thinking, oh, that's as good as I can get it. Then the next day I'll throw it out.
I think that's a healthy attitude, not to go on and on and on.
I don't think you have to, when you do painting, I don't paint to sell. I think that's very important. I don't paint to sell. I paint to paint. I had a friend, I'm always telling about my friends, but this friend's name was Keith, and it was in Redwood City, and he played in a band, and his band got very popular, and they had to start playing what the audience wanted instead of what they wanted. And I will never forget his coming to visit me and saying, don't ever do your art for money. Don't ever do it. And I thought, well, an awful lot of people do, but don't do it, because you no longer satisfying. What you're doing is you're satisfying an audience, not yourself. And I believe everybody needs something that satisfies them. Not the person you're living with, not the audience, not the guy next door, you. I think we're not kind enough to ourselves. I think we would all be better, happier people if we made an effort to do wonderful things for ourselves. And one of the wonderful things I do for myself is I wear hot pink tights.
Right. Okay. Lynn, Ruth, where can people read a bit more about you and learn about what you've done before?
They can see me on my website, which is Lynn Ruth at LynnRuthMiller.com. LynnRuthMiller.com, LynnRuth, Miller.com. I have a book called Getting the Last Laugh, which is on Amazon, and it's Getting the Last Laugh because there's a bogus one that's out there. But you know it's me because I'm on the cover holding a little dog. They can read about the life that I've described. They can go on Amazon and get my novels. I have two novels and two books of short stories. I have a YouTube channel where I talk about things like what we're talking about. I'm pretty much all over the web.
Right. And my final question to you is, what would your present self tell your younger self?
I would say, don't care so much about what others think. Don't care so much about what's proper and what's done. Don't be afraid to take a chance, because I don't believe you make a mistake. I don't believe in failure. I didn't believe in failure then, but at the same time, I felt that I failed. Since I've been, I would say, 60, I no longer felt that the things that didn't work out for me were failures. I felt they were learning experiences. So that's what I would say to myself, my younger self. You don't fail. Try. If you don't try, nothing will happen.
Right. Well, I think that's a very good point to end on, if I may. And just to thank you once again very much for talking.
My pleasure.
Being so frank and getting on the podcast.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
For having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Too Young to Stay In, Too Old to Go Out. The beauty of podcasts is that you can decide to listen while staying in or going out. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and if you did, please remember to spread the word. Keep up to date with future podcasts and events by subscribing and adding alerts to whichever platform you are listening on. I'd love to hear your thoughts and suggestions on future topics or guests, so do get in touch.